This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sent to the line by Gensel, but kept in by Ekblad. Runs a little interference into Gensel. Sent toward the net. Rebound! Score! This time it's going to count!
And this is a really good play off the Reinhardt rebound. Look at Ekblad. He doesn't slam it into Vasilevsky.
He has 118 career regular season goals. That's the franchise record. They score again! Off a Caravan in front.
It's the Panthers' turn. 11 seconds. Ekblad and Jones.
There is nothing better than playoff hockey. And we are underway again. Score! Just to begin 9 seconds in. Back the other way comes Hintz. Driving the net. Rantanen. He's got it. Score!
More games in the books. One significant question comes from it. Who got rolled harder? Your lawn, Brandon Hagel, or the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Well, Brandon Hagel got rolled, and I would say Zemgus Girgensons got also rolled pretty good by Mikkola on that. That cost Mikkola $5,000. My lawn was already rolled, although I got stuck in my with my lawnmower in a wet spot, and man, a lot of people stopping on the road. And do you need help? No, I got it. Pulled a four-wheeler, hooked it up, and yanked it out. It was good. But I think the Tampa Bay Lightning got rolled. They got rolled. And listen, I don't like to pick on officiating, but number one, Aaron Ekblad tied it at two. There wasn't one player offside. There was two players offside on the same play. And they let the play go. A scored, challenge, offside, no goal. And then Aaron Ekblad tied it at two again later. And he should have been out of the game because the referees missed a clear forearm elbow to the face. That should have been a five in the game. No penalties were called. Ekblad makes a big difference in the game in his physicality and also in scoring the tying goal.
Did the Lightning get rolled harder because the NHL did not deal with Tkachuk the same way they dealt with Hagel?
No. I actually felt like the NHL did the right thing. And it was the right call.
Do you think Ekblad on Hagel happens if Tkachuk is suspended?
I think they don't go together. I think that the play Ekblad made, Ekblad is in his second game back, right? Mm-hmm. The first game he plays after being suspended 20 games for PEDs, and then he comes in the second game. He wants to make an impact. It's all about physical play for him and how he wanted to make the impact. He comes in. Look, we've seen that hit happen many, many times. That's how defensemen 20 years ago were taught to go in and hit somebody. Mm-hmm. Stick low to puck, come through, forearm right in the chest, and you knock him down.
But it wasn't the chest.
It was in the head. But Ekblad came in trying to do what he always does. It wasn't like,
did
I'm going to go
though?
After
he...
Yeah. Yeah, I think he wanted to do what he always does and caught. His elbow came up, caught him in the head. And look, we showed a replay on MSG. The referee's right there. I was going to put a tweet out last night for protecting the referee in that situation because I'm like, listen, the game is fast. The referee...
But the parody Dave Jackson account was already taken, so you couldn't put the tweet out?
I couldn't do that now. And I love Jax. Don't go after Jax. Jax is good.
But if Mark Messier can go after Dave Jackson, I am in full pursuit mode of Dave Jackson here. Like, Dave Jackson had the audacity to try to say... with the big screen so we could all see, look, the referee is not looking at the play. Zooms in to the ref looking at the play and Messier going, he's looking right at him.
Yeah. So the same thing happened for me, but it wasn't on live TV. So I saw the play and I'm like, the referee's right there, but the referee has to come off the wall, spin. There's players in the way. He's trying to get out of the way. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe he didn't get that good of a look because he had to kind of avoid the play and get. And then I slowed it down. And I looked at him like, he's staring right at it. Like he's 7 feet away staring right at it. So I didn't put anything on social media because I'm like, I can't defend this. I cannot defend this. And then they showed the other replay. There's a linesman on the wall that's got a direct line of sight with the play. And the play was whistled right after. So linesman could easily go to the refs and say, that's a five. There's an elbow to the face. Oh, okay. Let's call a five and review the play. They have that tool. But they didn't do it. And then it goes.
Why do you think they didn't do it?
Huh?
Like, do you think linesmen need to be encouraged more to get involved in this process? Do you
100%.
Think the temperature of a series prevents them because they don't want to stick their nose in? Like, I'm curious, like, of the human nature aspect of it, the stepping on toes aspect, like, because the reality is everything you're just saying. There's four officials on the ice. Somebody has to be able to step up, even if the closest guy didn't make the call. Somebody, and the only reason I phrased it the way I did about Ekblad taking advantage of Hagel is the Panthers need no reason to feel like they are Teflon. But when they get away with the Tkachuk play, and again, I know you're different on this, but I also know a lot of people are also different than you on this.
They think
based on the intent, even though the result was different, meaning Barkov appeared injured at the time, Gensel was not, the intent certainly seemed almost identical. And it's Matthew Tkachuk. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Here's the thing with when it comes to, like the Florida Panthers in that situation, Ekblad in that situation. I think that Tampa winning game three, not just Tkachuk hitting Gensel at the end, but Tampa winning game three, whoop, it raised the temperature up. Because then all of a sudden it's like, okay, like the Tampa Bay Lightning could be back, and you know they're getting Brendan Hagel back after the one game suspension. Like there could be a lot happening. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been Braden Point. It would have been Nikita Kucherov. It would have been Gensel, Hagel, whatever. Ekblad comes in to try to make the same play. But you talk about should the linesmen step in, and are they more worried about it? I always go back to who would complain more in the situation. Right? Like Timo Meier got a 5-minute major for goalie interference the other day on Freddie Anderson. They go and review the tape and they say there's no penalty on the play. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to complain that maybe the linesman went up to the referee and said, hey, we got to look at that play.
Right.
Because they did. They deemed there was nothing. Okay, we're fine. Like on this play, if the linesman go up to the referee, John McIsaac and Chris Rooney, they go to them and say, there was an elbow to the face.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? Doesn't matter if I'm sure. Call a five, and then you'll see it on the iPad. And if I'm wrong, nobody's going to complain that, the linesman was wrong. It's just, let's make sure that we get the right call here. They gave us that tool. Let's make sure we have the right call.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do it, right? So to me, that was a miss. So John Cooper was livid on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tampa scores two quick goals. So the impact of Ekblad's hit could have turned into a positive for Tampa, but it ends up that Ekblad scores and Mikkola got a five. And all of a sudden, if Mikkola gets a five in a game on the hit on Gergensen and Ekblad's already been kicked out, Florida only has 4D to the rest of the game. But they didn't, and they had one of their best defensemen still in the game, which it makes a difference.
Well, the problem for Tampa was that they missed on the power play on the Mikkola major.
Yeah, on the 5-minute major.
And missed the opportunity to extend the lead from 2-1 to who knows what. And that's just part of the storyline here. But, and I know you didn't say this, but just because the Lightning responded with two quick goals after the missed call, the fact of the matter is they're still playing without Brendan Hagel. And regardless of what you thought of the call, non-call, it was a horrible fall to the ice. And it now appears like it's way worse than what Barkov took in the moment. Only because I still don't know how Barkov returned for the next game. I don't. I don't even know what the percentage of players in the NHL is that have dealt with head injuries at some point. But Barkov is among that large group. And so I was fearing the worst, obviously, when he got railroaded by Hagel. Mm. And I don't know. I worry for every player when they're in this situation, and it's hard not to worry about Hagel. And then the reality is the, like I said, the Lightning didn't add to the lead. The Panthers get two, I mean, not unlike, I mean, identical basically to the Lightning, two goals in 11 seconds. They get two and 11. You can debate like how good of goals they were, how fortunate of bounces that, whatever. I mean, it's just, it, that was the nature of the game last night. And now I don't even know, like, you know me, I've just had a poor feeling about the Lightning in this series from the get-go, which is why I went with the Panthers. 9 times out of 10, I would take the Lightning. But I just feel like the Panthers are, they're hard to beat right now for a gazillion reasons.
Yeah, I underestimated the impact Tkachuk was going to have coming back. And obviously, Ekblad in game 3-4, I think it makes their defense better. But a couple of quick things on, like, the Ekblad second goal and the penalty kill that you talked about, the 5-minute major that Tampa failed to score. Again, it comes down to make the right call early in the game and the impact of Ekblad, not just that hit that wasn't penalized, but probably his impact for the rest of the game, because this is, you know, that's in the first period, right? So when
second
he hits
period.
Second period. Mm-hmm. So
scoreless game halfway through the game.
Yeah, after one. You're right. Second period, it's on the left side. That's where it all happened. Who played most shorthanded time for the Florida Panthers last night or yesterday afternoon? Last night. Is Aaron Ekblad. Ekblad played almost 4 minutes of shorthanded time.
I mean, the Lightning might have been welcoming that. He was on for 4 goals against the previous game. It's not like he's Norris.
But
out
that
there.
five on four for 5 minutes, that major, like, look at the way that the Florida Panthers played defensively. Their penalty kill was great. Ekblad was a big part of that. Yeah. So not only does he have that impact, and then he scores a tie-in goal. Here's another impact that we have. As the Vezina winning candidates were announced yesterday, Connor Hellebuyck, he's struggling right now in the playoffs. Darcy Kuemper, he was really good in the third and overtime, but still the numbers are a little rough in the playoffs. And you're looking at Andrei Vasilevskiy, who that second goal was a terrible, terrible rebound that he gave up to Aaron Ekblad. The puck has come in. He sees the puck come in the whole way. He's looking to redirect it in the corner, and he, I don't know if he kept his eyes off of the puck or something. He didn't see it all the way through, and he missed it. You could see his right blocker hand and stick kind of wanting to flip the puck to the corner, and the puck went right to the middle, and he missed it. And that's on Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yeah, but and then it's also on the two guys that didn't cover Ekblad. Also, he can't possibly be that wide open.
He can't possibly be that wide open, but if he puts the rebound in the corner, we don't talk about it. And that's your job. And look at Vasilevskiy. I was alerted by this from Frankie Corrado this morning. And Frankie Corrado does great work up in Toronto. He said, here's Vasilevskiy's numbers, the 3 trips to the Stanley Cup Finals. 927 save percentage, win the cup. 937 save percentage, win the cup. 922 save percentage, goes to the final, loses to Colorado. The next 3 playoffs, 875, 897, 884 right now. And the year that they lost to Toronto was an 856. Mm-hmm. That has been the problem. Like, Vasilevskiy has to be like 915, 920 for Tampa to be good. And right now he's not. And Tampa's down 3-1.
Correct. But this is also not just Vasilevskiy. This is every team pretty much needing this, right? Like, some teams overcome it. And it's still a super, 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 super small sample size. So I can't even get into those types of numbers. Like, over the course of a whole playoff run, like you're saying, yes. And the thing is if they come back to win this series, there's a better than average chance that Vasilevskiy will end up in the playoffs with a save percentage of 910 or better. Right? Like, that's just averages. That's just the way it goes. But he had stabilized, and then that was a tough third period for sure.
Tough 11 seconds, right? He gives up the second goal. And then
so
the
what
other
did you
one,
think when
it's a
like,
good deflection? And it,
obviously
but it
we've
still
never
beats
seen,
him through the armpit, right? It's still a goal that goes through him.
We've never seen that before. The, you know, Lightning scoring 2 and 11 seconds, and then the Panthers scoring 2 and 11 seconds.
Yeah.
Did it remind you of anything, though? Especially the Panther portion of it, because it happened late in the third?
Oh, I can't off the top of my head. I'm trying to think of my playoff experience in Buffalo, but then didn't involve me. Then I don't care.
Okay. Well, fine. I'll just be over here, and I'm not going to comment.
Just kidding. I just wanted to make a snarky comment.
Why? For scoreboard purposes, you're still
no.
Way
if it doesn't
me.
Involve me, I don't care. That's basically how selfish I can be. So yeah.
Oh, we could go in a million different directions with that one. No, it's not because it's the first round, and it's not because it didn't happen in the last minute, but it did remind me of 2013 and the Hawks' famous 17 seconds.
Yeah.
So they're in Boston, game 6, chance to win the cup, but they're losing with a minute 15 to go. Bickle and Boland score 17 seconds apart. So not only do the Bruins not extend the series, not go to overtime, they lose and have to watch the cup paraded out on home ice in the most stunning fashion. So that's kind of where I went last night, was like, well, this feels a little bit familiar. And part of it comes from the Panthers having the championship DNA.
Exactly.
Which the Hawks had at the time, because they had already won in 2010. So you sometimes see similarities, right, in teams. And it was it just reminds you of how we can wide brush either way at the drop of a hat, right?
You could have
sat there and said, wow, the Panthers, look at them. They just choked 2 in a row on home ice, and now the Lightning are back in the series. But we're talking about 11 seconds of fortunate play that results in them now having a stranglehold on the series.
Yeah, I mean,
crazy, right?
look at tonight. We're getting the Oilers and the Kings tonight. The series tied at 2. You could say that it should be 3-1 for the Kings. You could say that it should be 3-1 for the Oilers.
Or it could really be swept. The Kings could have swept them. The Kings could have exercised the 3 years of demons here and already be on to round number 2.
And now where's the pressure? It's all on the Kings. Because the Oilers are like, you know what? Like, we have Calvin Pickard in that. You know, we like,
and what's his
Evan Bouchard.
Percentage?
Oh, it's not good.
No, but that's my point. Is it's 2 games. The sample size isn't great. But guess what? He's 2-0.
He's 2-0. So, and he's given up a bad goal in pretty much every game.
Yep.
But the Oilers are probably the one team that should have embraced that mentality of, like, we have to outscore our defensive, like, issues here. Look at how in game one, period 3, they just basically played to score, right? Their mentality was, we need to score goals. Mm-hmm. We cannot just say, hey, we need to play good defensively. Let's score goals. John Klingberg played almost 10 minutes in the third period of game 4. You don't play John Klingberg 10 minutes if it's not just about, we got to score. And Evan Bouchard, who's made some really tough play defensively, ends up scoring 2 goals in game 3, 2 goals in game 4, both in the third period in game 4. And they were talking about, and you talk about hockey history, Chicago, and all of this. During the broadcast, they brought up the, hey, who's the only defenseman to score a hat trick and by scoring the third goal in overtime? And it was Eric Desjardins in 93, game 2 against the LA Kings. So now it brought back the LA Kings aspect of it or whatever. But that's what the Oilers are doing right now. Mm-hmm. It's all about, let's just, who cares about the defensive side? Who cares about our goalie? Let's go out and try to score goals, as many goals as we can. And that's worked. That's worked in the third period of game 3, that's worked in the third period of game 4, and that has to be the way they play game 5 tonight, because if not, you're giving the Oilers a chance to play to their identity.
I'm looking up a defenseman's name right now based on that little nugget of trivia you just presented.
Well, Bouchard didn't get the hat trick, so it doesn't matter.
The only defenseman
to do it is Eric Desjardins still.
Right, but do you know what I thought of when you mentioned defensemen and playoff hat tricks?
Ooh, no.
Andy Delmore.
Oh.
May 7th, 2000, against Pittsburgh in a 6-3 Flyer win.
Wow.
Yep.
Was that the series that ended with Primo scoring in a triple OT or quadruple OT?
Five overtime on
Ron Tugnut.
On Ron
Tugnut.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Man. That game ended, that one you're speaking of, the five overtime, it ended around between 2:30 and 2:40 a.m. Eastern time. My alarm was set for 3 that day because I was doing the morning shift on radio in Ottawa. So needless to say, didn't bother. Just decided to head right to work.
Took a shower and, I mean... We were talking about, like, Ottawa was down 3-0, and Claude Giroux was on that Flyers team that came back from a 3-0 deficit to the Boston Bruins to, you know, win it in Game 7. Mm-hmm. Simon Gagné was on that team. Again, he actually scored the game-winning goal Game 7. Yeah. But he was on that. He was actually on the ice with Keith Primeau on that 5-overtime game that the Flyers beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. So there's players that somehow in the playoffs always seem to like take a step forward, right? They're always there in the middle of the action, and there's guys that don't. Like Connor Hellebuck is one that seems to not be there when the playoffs and when the heat is on. It's like, where's Connor Hellebuck? There's guys that they go the other way. They're like, they're playoff performers. You know they're going to be there. But there's some that are nowhere to be found, and Connor Hellebuck is one of them.
So is not fair because Kopitar is one of those players and has performed and won cups with LA. But the way you just described it and the guys that are winners, in like, are the Oilers not in the driver's seat here because of Draisaitl and McDavid and Bouchard? Like, do they not feel like the ones that are going to make the difference? Or is it just whatever way the wind's blowing, because this series is likely going to go 7 anyway, because the Kings will probably win on home ice tonight, and then the Oilers will probably rally from 4-0 down in Game 6 to win and then force Game 7, and then everybody's going to talk about, oh my gosh, the Kings are never going to overcome this Edmonton hurdle.
I think that's a very valid observation of thinking you're the Kings, and for 4 years now you've played the Oilers in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And the first three went the Oilers way, and now you felt like this is your time. Yeah. This is different this year. And after winning the first two, now you've let it slip. And yes, the Kings let it slip. Look, the Oilers played and they won. But I feel like both of those games were in the hands and in the control of the LA Kings and let it slip. So there is that factor. I'm not going to say the Ottawa Senators are going to come back, but the same kind of like theory or whatnot has been surrounding Marner and Matthews in Toronto, right? Only one playoff win.
Fair?
I think, you know what I think? I think that that narrative should surround Sheldon Keefe more. And right now, Sheldon Keefe's in New Jersey, and he's got injured roster to deal with. But I want to see Sheldon Keefe being able to say, hey, I'm the coach that's going to put my team in the best position to win. Right now, it's tough, and I get it, right?
His roster is not...
It's not good.
I mean, they're too injured. I wouldn't put anything on Sheldon Keefe this
year. But this year, I'm going to hold judgment. But if he had to have Jack Hughes and Dougie Hamilton and everybody healthy, and he would be down 3-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes, I would be holding judgment. I would not be withholding judgment.
Yeah, I don't think they would be down, quite frankly. I like the Devils roster when healthy.
Yeah, now they have an opportunity. No Freddie Anderson tonight.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, did you just throw out any predictions on Toronto, Ottawa, New Jersey, Carolina? Did I miss
Toronto,
those?
Ottawa. Toronto's going to, again, like my player's mentality, if I'm Ottawa, is we just had to win one game in Toronto.
Right.
Because then we come back home, Game 6, we're going to win, and then we have Game 7 where we can flip a coin. Right? Yeah. That's the easy way to look at it, but that's the positive mindset you got to have.
Okay, so you also said something yesterday that I didn't challenge you on for like clarity. You said Toronto has the better goaltending.
Yes.
Do they have the better goaltender?
Oh, taking careers, obviously Linus Ullmark has more on the resume and he's the better goaltender. But if I'm going to say right now, okay, we play street hockey, backyard pond, and there's two goalies to pick, and I got first pick, and I got to pick a goalie. I'm looking at Linus Ullmark, looking at Anthony Stolarz. Stoli, you're my guy. Like, I feel like I want Stolarz in net right now over Linus Ullmark. That's how I look at it in the playoffs.
Hmm. Would you have said that a year ago?
No. Like, I had some people reach out, you know, say, what do you think of Anthony Stolarz and teams that are probably looking into him? And I'm like, he's big. He seems to, you know, be one of those goalies that have all the tools, but never was able to do it over a long period of time because he would have had his chance. He's a backup. Did you know Anthony Stolarz has never, this is his first professional playoffs. He never played in the playoffs in his pro career. Mm-hmm. The teams that he was on never made the playoffs. Or he never played because he was
the
backup.
He won the cup last year.
I know. I'm saying the team that he was on when he was a starter never made the playoffs. Yes. And or he was a backup and never played. Like, that's what it was. Maybe. He never had a say enough to say, hey, I know what that's like to be the starter in the playoffs because he's never been that guy.
Mm-hmm. I guess the reason for the revisit of the comment yesterday and the reality of the fact that they are playing today, the reason I bring it up is because the Leafs are coming off of a loss, and this is the first time Stolarz has lost in a long time.
Yes.
We saw him roll through the end of the regular season, including yet another shutout against the Buffalo Sabres. And so I don't imagine one game matters a lick. It's just, I'm curious of what the feeling is like when you never lose. And it feels like he was never going to lose again. And the Leafs could have very easily swept that series based on everything they do right and the fact that they were clearly pretty comfortable going to another overtime game.
And I think that's where, if you're the Ottawa Senators, you have to start playing a little bit of mind games and the way you answer questions after, so that the media runs out to the Leafs and start asking questions about, this is three overtimes. Game 2, 3, 4 went to OT. Could have gone either way, right? And the Ottawa Senators found a way to win game 4 in OT, but it was one shot one way or the other. And I think that that's almost like what you have to keep banging the drum, so that now the media goes out to Stolarz and say, do you feel like this series is a lot closer than 3-1 because three games went to OT and it could have gone either way? And then they ask Matthews that, and they ask Marner that, and they ask Craig Berube that. And you have to, like, put that, plant that seed. Because I feel that if the game is close now in the third period, and then if it goes to OT again, all of a sudden you're Toronto, you're like, man, again, like, is this close? This team is closer. And now you start, does it work? I don't know that it works. But at least you put that, doubt a little bit. You try to get any advantage you can.
I'm glad you asked the tough questions of yourself. That's exactly what I was thinking. It is Toronto, Ottawa tonight, New Jersey, Carolina, Minnesota, Vegas. Will we ever talk about the Wild and the Golden Knights again on this show? Edmonton and LA. We continue to talk about that series perhaps more than others. Guess what? There was another game last night.
Yes.
And Dallas is in a very familiar position to a year ago. We'll touch on that when we come back at the end of this week. Well, the end of the work week. It's another Friday night in Banditland. This time, it's the semifinals. It's game one in a best of three. We've never said it before. Buffalo-Vancouver in this playoff matchup. The Bandits are gunning for a three-peat. They need to get through this best of three, clear that hurdle, get to the final, and it all starts semifinal-wise against Vancouver this Friday at 7:30. Visit bandits.com/tickets to purchase yours today. Just shy of 18,000 for last week's quarterfinal win over San Diego. Can't wait to see Bandit Land filled once again as they take on the Warriors on Friday. We're back after this.